lovely. Welcome all. My name is Lanny Peterson, and I am so delighted tonight to welcome Susan Kaplan, who is here with us to talk about her program, Peace in the Family, which is a family educational model which uses stories and skills to build more peaceful and healthy families. So I'm not going to say more because I want Susan to have as much time as possible. Welcome and thank you for being with us, the Healing Story Alliance, tonight.
Thank you. And welcome to everyone who's with us. And thank you, Lonnie, for inviting me. So peace in the family. What I'd like to do is do an overview of the program, talk about some of the different formats and some of the collaborative process that went into developing, and then go to questions. So, but first, a short story. Growing up in Arizona, I have very fond memories, and I go back to see my mother and at that point my father as well. And one particular year, coming from Colorado back to Arizona, I was just filled with the warmth of some of our family rituals. So I went to my mother and I said, you know, I'm just so touched by your intentionality for some of our rituals. And so I started telling her how I loved when the monsoon rains came, I would sit with awe and watch the heat lightning just take over the whole sky above the Catalina Mountains and the desert sky, just full of lightning. My mom would turn off all the lights, would open the curtains, and it became a sacred ritual to me. And I don't have that in Colorado. So as I was...
Right.
Welcome. As I was in the middle of... just thanking her for this beautiful ritual, she was very shaken and said, you know, that was not a special ritual. You know, the only reason I did that was because we didn't want the house to get hit. And if you had electricity on, it would draw the lightning. So for me, that was my beginning of understanding that sometimes within families, we create an intentional atmosphere and we use our stories with intentionality. But sometimes we don't. And the things that we do without even realizing it creates a whole nother set of stories. So several of us, there were two trainers that taught parent education, and there were three storytellers. And we sat down and we started to think through how could we build a program that's inviting to families, that helps each family find their own assets, their own gifts, and helps them build their skills so that they can be resilient. And at that time, we wrestled with so many family programs, and especially parent education, is geared towards seeing the family as broken. So they need discipline. They need anger management ideas. They need conflict ideas. And much of the material had a view of families being broken. So that's all I'll say about that. So in our effort to create a program that would support a family's sense of wholeness and their ability to learn from each other and for families to learn from other families within their community setting, we came up with four categories: rituals and traditions, communication, playing together and restoring balance. Now, I want to comment on just a couple of background. There's a wonderful article in the Psychology Trauma in 2010 by Kisser and Baumgardner and Dorado. And I can certainly send you the link if you're interested. And they were talking about who are we but the stories we tell and family stories and healing. And how often families create a shared frame of meaning from events that happen, stressful situations, crises, as well as celebrations and traditions, rituals. Also that there are developmental stages that happen within families, and they're parallel, but they're often invisible within many families. And that's the developmental stages of children and also of the parents. And it's so easy to internalize problems and challenges, point fingers, who is the wicked witch in the family, who is the princess, who is the... And so these stories then take on their own meaning. Rather than normalizing some of the problems that all families face, which is part of building the resilience. Just a couple more comments about that. Also recognizing the cultural traditions that exist and really inviting that out as a real gift, as a real asset, and especially within refugee families and first generation families. They're surprised to understand that their story sharing is a strength and a gift. And that also contributes to building that sense of resilience in the family. But we have some strengths that we didn't know. A couple more things. If you're not familiar with the Search Institute, they talk about assets. It's an asset-based model. And so we drew upon some of those areas as well, helping families develop and extend their sense of support, positive family communication, creating other adult relationships and caring neighborhood, helping family boundaries, and understanding their role and how to support their children. So Search Institute was a resource we drew upon, as well as what I call the applied storytelling literature and richness of just using story. So let me see where I'm at. I'm trying to make sure time-wise I'm okay. So we developed rituals and traditions, communication, playing together, and restoring balance. So what I'd like to do is just walk through each of those areas and just give an example. For each area, a traditional story is shared. We encourage personal story sharing, either through the activities or as right after the traditional story. And then there's a set of specific skills that are taught. And the skills vary depending on what the audience is, what they have asked for, if we're being invited in through a school setting. Sometimes the social worker may have some things that she's already been working on with some of the family education or parent education. So the rhythm, though, is story, traditional story, activity, immersed with the skill building. I feel like I'm talking faster than my mind can catch up, so let me take a deep breath. So under rituals and traditions, that is making a distinction between routines and rituals. So many of families see daily functions as just routines, and they miss all kinds of opportunities to spend some kind of quality time, even if it's a family where parents are working three different jobs and the only time they see their children is at bedtime or driving them in between from school to home. Or how do you create a sense of mindfulness and ceremony and recognizing the time to be in relationship? So it's helping distinguish between routines and rituals. And then traditions, this especially helps families who live between different worlds. So it might be several spiritual traditions that they're drawing from and living in between. Interfaith family, maybe biracial couple, might be geographic issues, and where they're trying to combine different worlds and often feel trapped between modern and traditional. Or how do we create something that's meaningful for us right now? And as their children grow, how do we change those traditions so it retains some of that meaning? And how do we maintain traditions so that they stay intact and they pass those wonderful treasures from family generation to generation? So I want you to think just for a moment of a ritual that was important for you. We have families at this point divide just into their immediate family, and we use something called a family shield and have them share the stories of their names, two or three important values, several rituals and traditions that they really value in their family right now. And then they draw a symbol of their family. So in that conversation, they begin a story sharing as a family that often they've not done. So it becomes very rich. And then we have the family get up, find another family, and share their symbol and share their ritual and traditions, values, and their stories of their names. We also look at what are some rituals that help create a sense of peace and peacefulness. So we talk about creating rituals for trying something new, or when there's an illness or an unexpected challenge. How to greet each other and how to say goodbye. How to mark some of the developmental successes about who you are and who you're becoming. For some families, when they have children that are labeled ADD or learning disability or developmentally disabled, or it becomes very difficult sometimes to keep a sense of celebration in that daily routine. So it's also looking at reframing what some of their daily rituals are. And this is hard in thinking about questions, but let me keep moving, and then hopefully if you have questions, we can come back to that. Communication. the focus on that is how are our words being used to build our relationships or tear down our relationships? What are our intentions behind our communication? What does encouragement look like? And what are some of our patterns? So I want you to notice that we're not at this point talking about difficult communication. So we're not talking about conflict and anger, painful discussions. We're just talking about everyday kind of communication. And I didn't mention in the rituals and traditions, I often use with permission. Panay Shyam has a wonderful story called The Artist's Search, where, I'll just mention that that's the story that I use for rituals and traditions. For communication, I use three languages, which is a Grimm fairy tale, and really helps look at what our communication is as we give it and how it is as we receive it. So we talk about what tears down and what builds up our relationship and creating an understanding of what's encouragement and what's discouragement with our verbal and also nonverbal communication. And if you're familiar with Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication, I teach compassionate communication. And so that's also incorporated in looking at the concepts of our communication creates connection. And we can use our communication to be right, to be judgmental, to diagnose and interpret. A lot of the things that parents often think they're supposed to do in terms of giving advice and straightening up that child. So the communication is really shifted as a strategy for developing connection, creating a meaningful relationship with your child and between each other. So the skills are observation, feelings, needs, and requests. So depending on the time that we have, we might do the feeling, welcome. We might do a feeling line where we stand up and divide the families, one side of the room and the other side of the room. And then we'll say, okay, side A, show me what anger looks like. And they act out what anger looks like. It's a great learning opportunity for the other side to see is all different kinds of way that looks. And sometimes our assumptions, our judgments get in the way. And then we'll switch and side B will act out sad. And we go back and forth. With older kids, it's nice to act out sarcasm, tired. So as we're going through these activities and communication, we're also talking about how our judgments can sour what we share with each other. And it actually decreases our rituals and traditions. Because if we're feeling like, well, there's no way I can fit in, I'm now, 16 years old and I'm just, there's no way I can fit into this. So they begin to see how the four areas are interconnected and that judgment can be just toxic in destroying their time, their special time together. If they're small kids, we will have them go sometimes to centers or everyone together will create talking sticks and we'll talk about how to use talking sticks so that we can give everyone a chance. We'll talk about family meetings. If they're older, sometimes we'll break them up into different groupings. So if they're teenagers, we'll have the teenagers in a group, and then we'll have parents in a group. Or we'll have teenagers with different adults and talk about talking and talk about listening and have some activities on listening and talking. I'm going to keep moving on. Playing Together is the next, and it's certainly teaching families, giving them an opportunity to practice being playful through cooperative games. We have found that many families don't understand that play, joy, and laughter helps release stress. It also builds our emotional bank account. And when we have that emotional bank account full, when we come to difficult times, stress or special needs, a death in the family, financial situations, where there's nothing there to help us move through that. So some families come with a lightness already, but what I've found are many families are so stressed and their children are already stressed that when we talk about playing together, they're relieved and they start laughing and just relaxing. So for small children, we'll play a cooperative musical chairs game. And it's instead of the children going out, the chairs go out. So everyone wins and they play it together as a family. And it's fun. It's fun. They laugh. And we're certainly there to help them walk through how to communicate if they're not enjoying it or if they're pushing among kids, and so it provides opportunity as they're doing activities for them to loop back and practice some of that communication. Several other things we do. We have a laughing tunnel that we'll use sometimes with older kids. We will, depending on the size of kids, we'll do knots, which is a game where everyone puts their hands in the middle and then they have to, without letting go of their hands, come back into a full circle. Sometimes we make stress balls. Sometimes we play Zoom, which is just a word game going around the circle. So just giving them a chance to practice being together. And the last is restoring balance. Restoring balance, again, it depends on the focus of this category for the families that we're working with. Restoring balance is acknowledging, normalizing that we all disagree. We all make mistakes. We all get stuck. And so how do then we come together and change our stories of each other so that we expect to be in balance and out of balance, that that's a natural occurrence. So within that, we, let's see, where am I? We often will talk about a healthy release of anger. We'll make door hangers, which hang on the door and say welcome on one side and say closed on the other, or pictures of a window open and then on the other side window closed. So how do we begin to use our communication in a way that we can express our anger that builds our relationships rather than tears them down? So I'm realizing we only have four more minutes. So I want to mention just a couple more things. In terms of format, there's been several different ways that we've used the program. In the largest setting, we had a Sudanese and Mexican and Mexican-American families within a Catholic school. There were 150 people. So we had bilingual storytellers and trainers, as well as English-speaking storytellers and trainers. And we brought them together in the beginning, broke out into the small sessions. So they each had sessions on all four rituals: communication, playing together, and restoring balance. And then we came back together. In a school setting, we had very young children. And so we divided the children and the adults and told different stories to them, and then brought them together and moved through centers, what we call peace centers. And so as they moved through the centers, we taught the skills as they made talking sticks and door hangers, that kind of thing. In another setting, it was an intergenerational program where there were grandparents and parents and aunts and cousins and children. And we moved through each area together. So we presented rituals and traditions, and then communication, and then playing together, and then restoring balance. And at the end, it was a beautiful, beautiful process of forming two circles, and first the adults blessing the children, and then they're switching, and the children on the outside circle blessing the adults. So it was just beautiful, beautiful. In another setting, it was a library setting, and it was a community of people who didn't know each other. They go to the library, but they didn't know each other. So there was a lot of interaction between families that helped build that particular library community. In one school, I was invited to do the program because the Chicano mothers and the Mexican mothers were fighting on the playground. And so she wanted to provide a mutual learning experience, a community building experience, for them to come together as family. And it was beautiful. So let me see if there's anything else. Overall, there was throughout the time in developing this program, there are times where I've had teams of storytellers and trainers, and there's other times where it's just me doing the program. Sometimes we stay together. Sometimes we break into different centers. So it's flexible for the age of the children of the family, as well as what the needs are within that community. So I'm feeling like I've said a lot, and I'd like to invite questions and hear real people now.
Susan, thank you for giving this lovely overview. So I open it up now to responses, thoughts, questions.
Susan, my name is Judith, and I have a couple questions. One, I'd love to know some good sources for cooperative game playing between the folks of different ages. And then the other question, which is very different, is how do you work with families whose cultural traditions are so different from what we're used to? Feel that they're honored parts of the society. So, for instance, you have a Cambodian family whose child is sick, and they're suddenly reporting them to DSS because the kid has coin marks on their arm, which is an honorable way of treating sickness in Cambodia, and they call it child abuse here. So if you were working with, say, the nursing staff in an ED room, how would you go about sensitizing them to that?
Well, two things. The cooperative game, I can send a list to so that you can have those resources.
Oh, that would be a godsend. Thank you.
Yeah, I could do that.
Actually, Susan, I'm going to ask if you even could post them on the listserv as a response to tonight, but that could be easily shared by everybody.
You know, I'd love to. I'm still trying to get on the listserv. My computer is not letting me. So I will try it, and if it doesn't go through, then you can let me know, and we can figure it out.
You did post. This is Gail Rosen. You did post, and I got it and responded to you. Did you get the response?
I didn't, I don't think. So thank you. Let's figure that piece out. I want to respond back to your question about sensitizing people who are working with different families.
Right.
So part of what I would do is have them go through their own experience of identifying important rituals and traditions in their own family.
Mm.
And having them then share that among their staff so that they move from, and if that is the focus, maybe I would only do that part,
mm-hmm.
and have them understand some of the differences that exist and just that honoring of some of the differences.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also, in that kind of situation, there's also a need for just cultural education. The sensitivity to what the coins are, and some of that is just informational training in helping them really understand what those customs are. I don't know if I'm answering your question or not.
You
was
are.
That helpful?
I know sometimes in this country, you know, what we believe that the Bible is the way it was and everyone else's religion is myth. You know, so trying to say to people, no, it's all myth. This is your myth. That's their myth. And how do you put people in a comfortable place to see that?
Mm-hmm. Well, some of that is creating a safe atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
so that people can talk about some of their discomfort and some of their misunderstandings, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
For many people who are working with families, their ethical view of their role is really important, but also understanding the families they're working with is also important. So I believe it's important to acknowledge both needs so that the nurses feel a real calling to protect children, and they are mandated to protect children. So just acknowledge their need and the pressures around getting that right. It's very stressful.
Mm, thank you.
As well as providing the education.
Yeah.
Yeah. So other questions?
Yes. Susan, this is Bob in New Mexico.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. At the beginning of the call, you said something that, you know, I thought was really important and profound, which was that your model, sort of your mental model for families, is that not coming from a place of brokenness, but
mm-hmm.
a place of wholeness,
mm-hmm.
and you know everything flows from that. So my question is, when you're convening these groups or these groups call you and ask you to do a program, how do you convey that to so that, you know, in the first session, people get that, or they're not, or families are not coming because they think that something is wrong with them, which I think would deter a lot of families from turning out in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, part of it is the written material that is used to publicize, but you know, there's two sides of that. One is when I present, I say I don't see them as as broken families who are here because they have to learn certain skills. I see them as coming with a sense of wholeness, and I hope that this program will help them discover their wisdom and mm-hmm. their resilience, things that they have used, their stories. And they respond well to that. But, you know, that there are problems sometimes in what I'm wanting the program to be and what my middle person is. So if that's a counselor at a school, for example, you know, what that counselor says to families to get them to come, I can't control.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can only try to convey the meaning to that counselor so that they indeed can convey that in their individual conversations. But it's a good question.
The reason I asked it is, I mean, it was a different setting. It was working with incarcerated juveniles, but we came into a situation where we were really, really coming from everybody's whole, and it's about finding your wholeness again. And we went into an institutional setting where their very, very explicit model was, you're all broken, and you really can't be fixed, but you need to learn some skills. And it wasn't a good match in terms of intentions, but we pretty much ignored the model of the institution we were in. But I just wondered if the families come, you know, in some situations feeling like they need to be there because they've been told that they're broken, whether you're sort of starting and having to overcome that with some folks.
Oh, I think so. I think so. You know, in the situation where the Chicana mothers and the Mexican mothers were actually fighting, you know, the principal said to me, you know, this school is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and until we can get them to, you know, be nice to each other, you know, the kids are going to continue fighting because they're watching their parents fighting. And so in that regard, if I can tease one heart to question their label of being broken, then
yes.
I'm doing a powerful, sending a powerful message.
Sure, amen.
So,
can I just ask one, this is just more of a logistics question, and you may have addressed this, but if you did, I missed it. Are these programs, how long do you typically meet in one, you know, in one session? And if it's more than one session, how many sessions do you tend to do in a series?
You know, I've wanted to do a series, and it's been hard to get places to buy into that. So mostly
okay, so
it's been one or two sessions. And the sessions last, for example, a three-hour session within a congregational setting. Usually within schools, it's pretty limited. The least amount of time, I've done an hour and a half, and I've teamed with two other storytellers so that we do a welcoming, and then we have them move into I think it was 20-minute centers, so there'd be a story and a quick activity, and then they'd move to the next storyteller.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, ideally 3 hours for an introductory allows just enough comfort for me. But most institutions don't give me the time I'd like. So
yeah.
An hour and a half to 2 hours works well.
Well, good. Thank you. That helps. That helps me just get a feel for it.
Yeah. And I want to mention one other thing. There's a professor at University of Chicago named Froma Walsh, and she has done a lot of work on strengthening family resilience. And what they've found is that there's no one right way for families to overcome. There's not a resilience model in that regard. And I found that really important information to let families know, because there's not a set family model. You know, the nuclear family is certainly one of many, many family structures now. And the same around family resilience. There's not a model that fits everyone. It's more of the perspective of how they see themselves coping, adapting, and creating some growth out of the experience. That's kind of reframing their stories so they're positive stories. So, ooh, this is a wonderful discussion. Any other questions?
Susan?
Yes. Hi, Susan.
Yeah.
This is, hi. Can you hear me? This is Dina in Maine. And I wondered if you could give a resource for some of the stories for each of the four segments. You mentioned the artist search for rituals and traditions. Were there examples for the other three?
Yes, let me see. And I use different ones, but the artist search I use, and then I always do my own story of an example of a ritual that is more of an everyday kind of ritual.
Okay.
So that there's a juxtaposing kind of a, you know, traditional ceremony as well as or celebration as well as something that's more of a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Under communication, I've used three languages. I've used the story of the neighbor and the missing axe around judgment. The sky pushing poles, I think, is in Margaret Reed McDonald's Peace Tales.
Mm-hmm.
The sky pushing what?
Is it sky pushing poles?
Oh.
It's where they many different cultures exist, but they don't have any shared language, so they learn one word, Yahoo, and so they push the clouds up, they push the sky up together. So that sense of how do we find words that bring us together.
Beautiful.
And I can't think of the name of that story. I think, and I'll continue a couple more, playing together. Certainly any Jack story, or I use Why Dogs Sniff. That is from, let's see, oh, I had it all here. Where is that? That's from Bird Baylor's book, and it is still that way.
Okay.
And restoring balance, I've used Elephant and the Blind Men. I've used my version of Two Goats on a Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Close the Door by Pleasant Despand. There's different versions of that. And oftentimes in the restoring balance, I will stop in the middle of the story and I actually step out of the story and ask them to brainstorm what they think the character should do in the story. And then I step back into the story and use their suggestions.
Great. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I do have a workbook, I should mention, if anyone is interested. I do have a workbook that has handouts and just has all this information. It's about 70 pages long.
And so how do we order the workbook?
You would, I guess, email me, and I can send you the information.
Okay.
What's your email?
It's Kaplan, Kaplan, at earthlink.net.
And if I email you, Susan, and you give me the information, can I then put it on the listserv until we get you on?
Sure.
Gail again. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'd appreciate that. You know, I think that the hard part in doing a family program, I find, is that I have to sort through my own family stories. And I have to be present to each of those four areas in a way that invites and welcomes anything from the audience. So I told a forgiveness story between my brother and I in Restoring Balance. And someone in the audience who was African-American said, why didn't you just, like, talk to your brother? Like, why were you so quiet? He was, you know, just completely confused with my story. So there were some big cultural differences. And it was an opportunity to talk about how easy it is in our communication to create judgments and blame. And that makes it almost impossible to restore balance. So weaving all four areas together is important. It's also being aware of what stimulates me within all four areas. Because I can create an obstacle for my audience by saying all families need to know about and tell a story that I think they need to learn from it. And I know I don't need to really say that to each of you being on the listserv, but I have found just within myself that sometimes that comes up for me. And I have to just be very honest with myself and say, that's not the story for this group. And I need to find a different story. Is that making sense?
Very much, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, other questions or comments?
I have a question. I'm Jamie. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm wondering if you have any activities or stories that would deal with diversity within family models, like whether it be biracial families or gay families or single parent families.
And what's your intent in using this story? Just for welcoming or?
Well, I'm working on a project right now, and I don't know if we're actually going to implement it. I'm a student at the moment. I'm a drama therapy student, and I'm in a group's class, and our group is thinking about teaching children about diversity, and one of the sessions would be about diversity within families. And so we're talking about, like, second graders and how we would, you know, kind of introduce the idea of, you know, acceptance among encountering different family models.
Sounds beautiful. Sounds beautiful. I'm thinking, my mind is going blank. For me, I tell my own story of being raised my father was Jewish and my mother was Southern Baptist. So coming from two spiritual traditions. So I tell my own story as a way to invite others to tell their story.
Okay.
So partly for me is that if I can show them that I'm willing to be vulnerable and to share personal story, then that invites them as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm trying. Pardon?
I'm just taking notes here, so. Keep
and
going.
that there are a lot of stories. My mind is blank here. Let me think. I don't know if others have stories that come right to mind.
It could be an opportunity to go to some of the compilations like Karen Chase's or Jackie Baldwin's and just research stories of diversity for certain ages, and there's a wealth of material out there that you can pick and choose from.
Also, when you're telling a story, it's so easy to include things instead of like pushing the point on someone's brain and saying, see, this is the point, you just say, oh, and her friend Sarah's mommies came to pick her up at school, you know, or Jonas's dads, or, I mean, there's subtle ways to include things so that they become part of the texture of the life instead
right.
of a pointed, you know, a pointed lesson.
Beautiful.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, there's a story, Blind Man Catches a Bird. And I've used that story to talk about generational differences as well as just how misunderstanding is so easy to happen. So sometimes I'll pick a story based on what happens in the story, and then I think it was that Gail who shared that, and then just change the characters. I'm wishing that we could be all in the same room, because it's a little strange to do a teleconference. I've never done this before, so thank you for your patience and my learning to do this.
You're doing beautifully. I know we have just a few more minutes left. I would love for you to talk a little bit more about the restoring balance part of your program, and you said something, I'm not sure I captured it right, but it's how do we come together to change the stories of ourselves or of each other? Did I capture that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And can you give an example of what that would look like or feel like or how you go about that?
So sometimes I'll talk about stress as something that throws us off balance. And I'll talk about in my own family, when my son would come home, he would be exhausted. He'd have a terrible day. He'd be angry. He'd be slamming doors. He'd come into his room, slam the door, and he'd turn the music on really loud. Well, that would cause me stress. So I would go and say, you know, you can't do this. And so immediately we're locked into an argument. So I'd use that as a personal story to lift up that sometimes what might be balance for one person can create imbalance for another. And sometimes the story sharing is very rich, where people will begin to share things, and my ability just to listen and to hear, and this is drawing from the nonviolent communication, my ability to just be present to them and hear their feelings and what their needs are helps that transformation to a new story. Beginning to understand, oh, okay, we both have a need to relax. So how then do we talk about that and reframe that in a way that invites us towards each other rather than stuck in, you know, the arguments and the anger and the name-calling, I mean, all the things that families do. It depends on the size of the group. When it's a large group, the largest I did was 150, there's different levels of conversations that happen, but we don't always get to that personal level. In smaller groups, I do have that ability to name that? And how can we reframe some of that so that the stories that our children bring with them will be positive stories, will be life-giving stories? So the story of the blanket is a good example for parents to understand how simple a negative story can grow and contaminate their connection. Am I answering your question?
Very much so. Thank you.
Great.
We have time maybe for one more quick question. Is there anything burning still out there? I think that's a sign, Susan, that you've been very comprehensive in your overview. You've given us so many gifts tonight. Thank you so much for bringing all you did, and it sounds like Gail might be helpful in getting some of your resources and information about them out on the listserv so people can learn more and be in touch with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I'm excited just to know there's other storytellers who value working with families. And I would love if we have a couple minutes for everyone just to say their name so that we can just be present to everyone that is on the call.
Lovely. Well, I'll begin. This is Lanny in Massachusetts.
Gail in Baltimore.
Dina in Maine.
Bob in Albuquerque.
Carol in Massachusetts.
Judith in Massachusetts. Hi, Gail.
Nayana in Massachusetts.
Hi, Nayana.
Amy. Oh, hi. Jamie in Kansas.
Hey, Jamie. It's Pilar in Kansas.
Hey.
Jane in Virginia.
Anyone
Wonderful.
Else?
What a blast. Susan, ever present at any conferences, storytelling-type conferences, as opposed to therapist-type conferences?
I do.
Have you applied for NSDEN next year?
I haven't. I didn't think about that. Do you think this would be valuable?
I think it'd definitely be valuable. I think also the deadline is passed
this
year. But I think they're going to go back to conferences every year, possibly.
Yes, we are going back to conferences every year. This is Jane. I'm
right.
on the board. So I know this. Oh. And, yes, so, yes, the deadline's passed for 2012, but check out the website, storynet.org, for upcoming deadlines.
Oh, great.
It's in mind for 2013.
I hope you take that as positive encouragement that tonight was a success and we all want to hear more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for
thank
hosting
you.
Coming.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Thank
Thanks,
you. Lonnie.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Susan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lonnie. Bye-bye.
Bye, Lanny.
Lanny, are you still on? Thank you.